This is Comics Palooza, the only comics book podcast that's always hot to go. I'm one of your hosts, Chance.
It's a comics and nerd culture podcast, and I'm your other host, Cameron.
Hey, Cam.
Hello, Chance.
How are you?
Oh, just great. Just drinking my Dr. Pepper Zero Sugar.
Ooh. I was telling Cameron that I am eating Wednesday cereal. I'll give it a quick little review. The color is concerning. Honestly, I got to show you a picture of this milk here in a second because it's wild. It's kind of terrifying how dark it is. There's a lot of food coloring in this, but it's fine.
It's probably just turmeric.
Black turmeric. I really always wanted Oreo O's to have marshmallows because I felt like that would make that cream flavor like really pop.
Do Oreo O's still exist or are they just gone?
No, they're still a thing. They might be Puffs now. I don't remember.
Puffs just aren't the same. It's not the same.
But this, it's like got a pretty pleasant chocolatey taste up front, but then it just kind of, it's nothing. It's pretty just nothing. Fun for the color it turns your milk, though.
That's nice.
So if you hear me making a few chomping sounds, I'll just finish a bowl of cereal.
It's the cereal. But yeah, but we're here another week.
Mm-hmm.
Another week in paradise, which is what I call talking to Chance.
Yeah, as you should.
And not just another week. This is our 40th week, 40th episode of this show. Which is funny because it's like in a month, it'll be like a year, which means you should be at 52. But we've taken some weeks off here and there.
Yeah, we haven't missed that many.
Apparently we have. I mean, I guess when all's said and done, I'm just discussing this with Chance on air right now. We're going out of town for fall break, and I don't think I'll have time to get my books and read them for next week, so we might not have an episode next
week. Wait, fall break is next week?
For Norman, it is, because they lined it up with OU Texas.
That's right. That's right. I was like, all the schools around here are getting out.
Till the week after.
Okay. I'm going to attempt to show Cameron this milk without spilling it. Remember, this is milk.
I can't see it. Oh, you failed.
I failed.
That's a fun bowl, though. The bowl looks like a milk splash.
Yes, it's my spilled milk bowl. It's my favorite bowl.
He doesn't cry over it.
It's
Is it flexible?
Yeah. It's the best milk bowl. Really quick, I'm going to go get a paper towel.
He was performing without a net, everyone.
I did spill very, very black milk on my keyboard. So...
While Chance is cleaning up the milk, I have an urgent news flash.
Okay.
It's as of 2 days ago, but it's breaking news to me. And that is that Chili's is getting rid of their skillet queso.
I already know.
This is just devastating. I just don't understand. The people in the comments of the article that I'm looking at are saying they're about to get cracker barreled. Let's just hope that's the case.
Why do you have to get rid of a queso to add a queso? That's my question.
What are they adding?
They're adding a Southwest queso.
And you probably can't eat that one, can you?
I can't. So, Chili's queso was the only queso I could get store-bought that I know of.
It's a real shame. Chance has a pepper, not even like the good peppers, but like
yes,
wild peppers.
I'm allergic to the family capsaicinanum, which is pretty much all of the peppers you know about mostly. But anything hotter than that, I'm good.
Jalapeno, a serrano.
I'm allergic to both of those.
What about Anaheim?
I don't know.
I guess you don't want to just mess around.
Yeah, that's not one I know of.
Habanero on up is okay.
Yeah, I do. I can do habanero. I can do ghost pepper. I can do Carolina Reaper. I can do Trinidad Scorpion. I can do Pepper X. I've done them all.
The names we have to come up with.
It's true.
This is the death bomb pepper.
Well, there's pretty much just one guy. His name is Smokin' Ed Curry, and he's like the guy breeding all of the hottest peppers.
Curry's a good name for a pepper guy.
Yeah.
Forget the Smokin' Ed. Just go with Curry. What are you pouring there?
There's some ASMR for you. This is just listen to Chance eat dinner.
Cereal and pepper, everybody.
40 episodes plus however many episodes of Boy Meets World fever plus like most of a year of
Kamen Rider.
Huh?
People should be used to this by now.
Yeah, I'm just saying, like, at this point, it's just, we're just doing it, you know?
We've really, you know, we've gotten too comfortable. Chance, what he's doing isn't just like bad etiquette. It is trying to get you out of your comfort zone.
Yeah, exactly.
If you heard that, that was my son. I gave him my Fitbit with the timer set on when he needed to, like, they've gone to bed, but they were like reading in their room. And it was like, when the timer goes off, it's time to stop. And he just came and said he didn't want to return my watch to me because he likes having that.
What do you do?
Makes him feel powerful, I suppose.
Yeah, this is my wife was not feeling well tonight, went to bed super early. So this is me struggle dinnering the end of the end of my day.
All right, I got my watch back.
He did it. Everybody, he did it.
He also left my bedroom door open. There we go. He's closing it. Good night, buddy.
Yeah, the other night, this was several weeks ago. My wife was also feeling bad, and I didn't know what to do for dinner. So I had a can of like Wolf Brand chili.
Uh-huh. Am I about to be sad?
Kind of, probably.
Okay.
Sometimes
I know.
It was me and my son, and I had a can of Wolf Brand chili, and I can like doctor it up with some hot sauce and things to make it very hot but edible. And I had bought earlier in the week a full loaf of sourdough.
Mm-hmm.
So my son and I sat at the table with a loaf of sourdough between us. I would pull off a part and give it to him. He would eat the fluffy bits inside, and I would use the crust of the sourdough to eat chili. And I was like, Asher, I think this is your first ever struggle dinner. You're going to have a lot of these if you're ever a single guy.
Yeah.
But he loved it. True. He loves sourdough. So he was just like,
yeah, sourdough's good.
He had sourdough and like a go-gurt and like some strawberries.
You know what I don't understand while we're talking about sourdough is why people that go to the Cheesecake Factory don't like the sourdough. They're like, I don't want it. I understand the brown bread is good. The brown bread is very good. But the sourdough is also good.
I can't help you with this. I've never had Cheesecake Factory.
You never have?
Never.
Should we take a bro trip to Cheesecake Factory sometime?
Let's do it. We'll record from Cheesecake Factory.
That feels a bit extreme.
We've done it before.
I know, but not from such a fancy establishment as that.
But is Cheesecake Factory fancier than Red Lobster?
I don't know. I think so. I think Cheesecake Factory is a tier above Red Lobster.
Really? Okay.
Tell us your thoughts, dear listener. What do you, in terms of like the fanciness scale, Red Lobster or Cheesecake Factory, which is higher?
Yeah, we'll do a B segment all about the tiers of
casual dining
chains.
Casual.
Sit down. Chili's just took a nosedive. Like, I don't even, what are they thinking?
I don't know when the last time I ate a Chili's was, anyway.
I mean, I probably eat a Chili's once every 3-4 months just because I want the queso, because it's the only queso I can easily obtain.
It's a real shame.
Chili's, just so you know, Applebee's has better mozzarella sticks than you.
Ouch.
Yeah. That hurt. I said it.
Mm. Anyway, this isn't a dining review podcast or what are our kids up to podcast, though it could be.
It could be.
And it has been, and it will be again. This is a comic book podcast. And if it's your first time listening, hello. Thank you for not turning us off already.
Or if you did, we get it.
But yeah, I mean, I'm not mad. I understand. I really do understand. But this is a comic book podcast, like I said. And we have each read some comic books this week. I've read 5.
Did you find a copy of issue 2?
Uh-huh.
Oh, see, I would have had 5 as well, but I did not find a copy of issue 2. So.
Gotcha. Well, yes, that's why I have 5. And I'm up first this week.
Okay.
So I suppose I will go. And I am very thankful that I did find that issue 2, because, again, we have a repeat victory. And that's Batman number 2. by Matt Fraction and Jorge Jimenez, is my book of the week.
I mean, it makes sense.
I mean, I enjoyed the first one. Obviously, it was my best book of that week. I think that this is just a step above, in just about every conceivable way.
Quick aside before you go, when I was talking to our comic book store guy, I made him double over with laughter because we were talking about, he asked me if I liked issue one. I was like, yeah, I liked it. And he's like, you seem to have some hesitation there. And if you don't know, he's very like monotone, very like, very like stoic, I would even say maybe. But he asked me what I thought of issue one. I was like, yeah. And he's like, but you have some hesitation. Like, what didn't you like about it? And I'm like, it's not necessarily that I didn't like about it. And I was like, have you ever seen like Justice League Unlimited? And he was like, yeah, I watched Justice League Unlimited. And I was like, you know, the issue or the episode, like the Batman Beyond one with like Batman and Ace. And he cracked up right when I said that. I guess it all clicked into place where I was going with it. And he was just like, I never saw it, but you're right. It's just that episode again. Where everyone's like, don't be too harsh, but get it done. And then he doesn't do it, and he just goes and sits next to them until they give up. Like, but this stoic man who I've never really made laugh, like I made him double over because I made that observation. So,
well, this one's not that. Yes. And this one heavily features Tim Drake, who is our Robin.
Who's one of your favorite comic book characters.
Like, he is. I really like Tim Drake. I've always enjoyed Tim Drake. Haven't really read a lot with him lately. Mm-hmm. I want to say he's gay now.
I think he's bi. He is in a relationship with a man, but I think he still like is attracted to Cassie.
Okay. I mean, whatever. That's just things that I had missed in the intervening years. Batman is obviously in this one, but I feel like it focuses a lot on Tim Drake, Robin. And I just really enjoyed that. So I'm just going to give us the play-by-play. I'm sorry, Chance, that you didn't get to read it, but you can read it later.
It's okay. I'll get it later.
And so this episode kind of has a little bit of a flashback that cuts in. And it is basically Tim learning to drive stick so that he could drive the Batmobile one day. And Damian's in it. So I don't know where the timeline of all of this falls. Because Damian is also there. But Batman's like, big day, Tim. He's like, this is awesome. This is the best. Damian is like complaining, like he's having to wash the Batmobile. And he's like, this is beneath my dignity. This insults both of us, you and I, Father, because of our distinctions. and Bruce is just like, Damian, when I insult you, you'll know it. But Tim is like, I can't believe I get to drive the Batmo. And then he pulls the cover off, and it's just like this kind of beat up old truck that he's going to learn to drive stick in.
You can't get behind the wheel of
the Batmobile, as we'll see later, because it comes up later. So he's like, you got to learn the manual transmission. You got to learn how to do all that before we really get going. Then we cut to the present, and there's a gang of some sort, some masked bad guys who've pulled over this truck. Like that's carrying some stuff, and they steal some things out of the back. One of the masked criminals like shoots the guy that was driving the truck, and they're like, this wasn't supposed to be the way it goes. We were just supposed to take the stuff and get out of here. So the police show up, and they start, one of the criminals has the box and he's running away. Tim Drake catches up to him. And so he's, you know, bantering a little bit. And he's like, what do you have here? What is this? Like some sort of new narcotoxin? You with the cartel? He like takes a little taste. He's like, that's kind of sweet. And the guy's like, it's baby formula. It's like for my baby. My baby's hungry. I stole some baby formula. Then the cops come and the criminal runs away, and the police shoot him in the back. And as he's running away, because, you know, the police force is like the real police force. But it's extreme because Vandal Savage is in charge for some reason that I don't know, but I still don't know. Maybe if I had read the other stuff, I would know. But Tim Drake is obviously upset about this. When he starts to run away, he like, it does the same thing with like the bat tools. Like he throws like a bat flashbang and it like tells us about that, and he's like bouncing off the stuff, but then the cop gets off a lucky shot and shoots Tim in the side, and then we get like our title page, and it's this with falling, with the red. It's just like, oh no. Then we cut back to the flashback where he's learning to drive some more. Damien makes a big deal out of it. He's like stopping and starting like you do learning to drive stick. Damien like jumps on the hood and he's like, you've been at this for hours, you moron. He's a fool. You have to let me try, father. And then Bruce is like, okay, foot off the clutch. And so then the car lurches forward and Damien falls off. So this is just like a funny little moment cut in this moment of seriousness. Then Tim comes to, and he's in the back of the police transport with a bunch of the criminals that they arrested. And they are all uncuffed, and Tim is handcuffed and also shot in the side. And so this isn't going to go well. And then the police officer's like, of course I'm going to drive rough. And so he's like, you know, taking turns really hard and all stuff to like jostle him about back there, more than jostle. So we have like a cool fight scene where Tim is fighting all of these guys in the back of the truck because they're trying to, you know, kill him. He breaks out of the handcuffs at one point. And then of course, the end of the first issue, we get Tim Drake gives the call to Batman that he's in trouble. So Batman comes and saves the day. So he throws some like road spikes out. You'll never guess what the road spikes are called.
Bat spikes.
You're right. It's a good name. I think I forgot to mention, no, it hasn't happened yet. There's just a funny moment. So the car, you know, spins out. Batman opens up the bag and he's like, rough night. And then Tim Drake's like, worse for them. Cause he, you know, beat them all up. Then the cops come around. And the main one that first shot Tim Drake is ready to like shoot Batman with a shotgun. And his partner's like, what are you doing? Like, they're not doing anything. Like, they're just trying to help. Like, this is Batman and Robin. What are you talking about? He's like, they're vigilantes. And you're on their side now. And he's like, what are you talking about? And then Bruce is like, police brutality and murder puts us on opposite sides, officers. And then the police are kind of in a standoff, or one's pointing their shotgun at Batman and the other cop's pointing his gun at the other cop. And then they fire, and Batman like gets in the way and throws his cape and like stops the shots. But the quote unquote good officer like got shot. And so Tim is like trying to patch him up. And the other officer like basically goes down too, but he has his shotgun and shoots Batman point blank in the back of the head, or pretty much point blank in the back of the head with the shotgun, which he's like armored up, but he's clearly not doing well. Concussed at the very least.
Can only be so armored.
But then we cut back and they're talking some more about Tim is still learning to drive, and he's just like, I wasn't ready. And Batman's like, you can't be in your head about it. Like, that's what it is. You can do it if you're not in your head. When you get in your head, that's when you have a problem. And he's like, but what if there's like an emergency with the Batmo and I have to drive it? And Batman's basically like, you won't choke, like, because I trust you, and you need to trust me that I trust you and believe me and what I'm saying. And what I'm saying is that I believe that you can do it. And he's also like, and don't ever call it the Batmo. Nobody calls it that. And then Tim's like, nobody calls it that yet. But then he comes to, and Tim has done some like first aid on the other cop, put some bat bandages on him, which are like, I guess, super bandages. And then they get the Batmobile, and Tim's going to drive the Batmobile. And this is funny. He's like, how many years does the Batmobile have? And Batman's like, 13. It has 13 gears. And he's like, of course it does. Why does it need 13 gears? And he says, it's got the 9 standard and then 3 quantum gears for use during spatio-temporal crisis events. And then there's the secret gear, 13. And he's like,
I feel like Matt Fraction is showing his boomer just a little bit. Because, like, only a boomer would think, well, you have to do it manually. You can't design, like, an algorithm to automatically do these things.
I suppose. But then he's like, secret gear? What does that even mean? And then Batman's just like, it means I have the coolest car in the world. Now drive it. I feel like motorheads or gearheads, whatever you would call them, are probably, like, those are better. So then they drive off, and then we get some news clips again of, like, officer-involved shooting. all of that. And then Vandal Savage is there, and he sees like one of the officers died. The one with the shotgun that shot Batman died from his wounds. But Vandal Savage is there, and he's basically like declaring war on Batman and Robin at that point. He's like, they're enemies of the GCPD. You know, just real bad guys, and we're basically declaring war on them at this point. They're enemy criminal combatants against us. And so that's where we are. But I just thought it was a really nice Tim Drake issue. Again, just continues to be a lot of fun. The gadgets are really great. I think it's a very fun Batman and Robin.
Love it. I do like it when Batman is gadget forward.
It's a good Batman. Somebody tried to reversal spray.
Mm-hmm.
And there's mine. That's it.
Okay. It's like, is there anything else? I really don't know what my number one is this week, because three of them could be. They were all so great. If I would have gotten that one, maybe perhaps a fourth even. I guess I'm going to go with the one that I think gives me the most to talk about. I wouldn't be shocked if you had it as well. but we're talking Spider-Man Noir number one, baby.
I didn't pick up that one. I feel like October is such a jam-packed month, and I have like a budget.
You didn't.
I'm not like picking up a bunch of things because things are tight. I know.
It's Spider-Man Noir.
Spider-Man Noir.
And it was fantastic. That is also important. This is by... They don't have the Marvel title page, so give me a sec. This is by Eric Larson, with art by Andre Brocardo.
Sure. Ooh, good old Andre Brocardo.
Art's very good. Story's very good. Like I said, there's three that could have been, but I thought this was a really fun start to a series. As far as I can tell, this does not seem to be a mini series. This seems to be a full ongoing. So I'm really hoping it does well and keeps going, because it's just a cool concept.
Mm-hmm.
And literally the first page is so cool. It just really sets the
oh yeah, that's nice.
Really just sets the pace. It's Spider-Man jumping out of a window with two guns firing, because he's a private eye in this one. He's less modern superhero, the system works, and more like depression, prohibition, the law can't give you justice, so I will kind of a guy. Which is one of those things I'm fine with if that's like A, the concept of the hero, and B, like we have a better hero to follow. I just feel like people think I'm a little bit more anti-vigilante than I actually am. But we open on Peter Parker as Spider-Man in his black spider suit with a trench coat and two pistols, dropping in on a robbery from the Scorpions. He is enraged that they killed the guards and stuff that were doing a gemstone haul, which is very, just, I feel like, very appropriate, just hauling gemstones like you do.
Mm-hmm.
So he's got great banter in this. It's different than Peter's banter. Most of it is him taunting them and being like, hey, I would love you guys to drop your weapons and we can proceed to do this in fisticuffs. Don't let the fact that I have the proportional strength of a spider, like, dissuade you from that. It's still, like, better than a gun. So several pages is just him fighting these guys and bantering with them. And there's at one point where a guy hits him right in the face with a box, and he falls to the ground, and two other guys grab his arms, and one guy grabs his legs, and there's a guy standing over him with a gun. He's like, you ain't so tough. Like, I got you. And he's like, yes, these normal people, they can hold me down. It's my weakness. And then he throws the guys on his arms into the guy holding the gun. And then he...
reminds me of Amazing Spider-Man. It's like, my weakness, very small knives.
Yeah, yeah, very much like that. And then he pops the guy with the gun right in the face, shoots him, and he falls somewhere. I mean, they're on the docks, so you can kind of assume into the river, into the ocean, whatever. Then he webs up all the people who survived. It's shown that like some newsboy kids are watching, and the cops come, and like, oh, Spider-Man got these guys for us. And then Spider-Man's like, go home, kids. You've seen too much violence today. He goes to his office because he's a private eye, and it turns out he's been doing so much multiverse stuff, he doesn't have any money.
Oh, no.
He's been saving the multiverse. So this book is full of stereotypes. So stereotypically hard-nosed Chinese landlord is screaming at him about the money. But her three-year-old comes in, and she really likes Peter. So she's like, Mama, it's Peter. And she's like, fine, have the money by Friday. And he's like, well, I don't even have a case. So, but who should walk in but the dame that sets it all off, Gwen Stacy. Gwendolyn Stacy, but he can call her Gwen. He has broken up with MJ at this point. And Aunt May is living with Mary Jane and her mom. And he basically says, like, you know, relationships don't work when you're not in the same dimension for long enough.
It's true.
But Gwen Stacy is going to hire Peter. I do not know what's happening outside my door. As far as I know, everyone in this house is asleep. I'll check in a second. But yes, so she wants to hire Peter because her dad is dead, and her dad said that all the cops in New York City were corrupt and she can't trust them. So she wants to hire a private eye, and he can obviously use the money. So it's a very funny moment where he gets the envelope. He's excited about it. He's putting it into his pocket. He turns the corner, and there's his very hard-nosed landlord. And she holds out her hand, and he's like, and he just hands her the envelope of the money that Gwen Stacy gave him, which is just very funny. He has a talk with. He has a talk with Aunt May, who kind of tells him he needs to stop using guns. It doesn't look very heroic when they get pictures of him for the paper. And he's like, yeah, but like, if they're going to use heaters, I need to use heaters. Then he goes to the morgue to get some information on Gwen Stacy's dad's autopsy. But he is quickly kicked out by the police. So he decides to return that night as Spider-Man, but the whole room is crawling with cops, and he's thinking that's very suspicious. Why would cops be crowding the body of a dead cop? Like, it's obviously very suspicious. So he runs from the police, who are shooting at him. He kind of gives his report to Gwen. She reveals that her dad had a giant vault, he's like, well, I guess we got to find the combination to this. He goes and has another chat with Aunt May about how terrible his life is, but has to cut it short because a Nazi bat with a homemade wingsuit and jetpack is robbing a bank. Oh, no, it's robbing the ticket booth for the World's Fair.
That's noir.
Yeah, he's robbing the ticket booth. So he takes down this Nazi bat with full, like, I mean, swastika, like Hail Hitler's, all that. They do not, you know, pretty it up by calling it Hydra or anything. And he takes down the bat, and the money falls on the crowd, and they all basically get their money back. He gives the thing to the police, and the police are like, a real hero would have gotten us the cash, too. And he's like, well, like, I don't really care. And he swings away, and he's like, so I stopped the robbery. I made a lot of people happy, and everyone still hates me. What do I get out of this? And then he realizes that a $5 bill is attached to his lapel. He's like, I get a free meal. So he goes and flirts with a waitress. He actually orders food, which she's like, wait, you're a bum. You don't order food. And while he's doing that, he's going over the case, and he comes to one inescapable conclusion. Gwen Stacy's dad was secretly a member of the Scorpion Gang, and Spider-Man shot him, and he fell into the river. And that is Spider-Man Noir number one. So I just think it's a really interesting setup. I don't know exactly what's going to happen. I liked the detective-y aspect of it all. I liked the intrigue of it all, the silliness of it all. And loser Peter is the best Spider-Man.
Mm-hmm. And I feel like hard-boiled detective is the best, like, down-on-his-luck archetype.
Yeah.
And so it just, again, really fits in.
Well, and it's just so hard because Spider-Man is such an important, like, character to Marvel anymore.
Uh-huh.
Like, he's just such a big character to Marvel anymore that, like, whenever they do a story with him, he's got to, like, I don't know, he's doing something with Hellgates right now. Like, it's always got to be this big story. But this is just down on your luck, Peter Parker, mm-hmm. who's trying to do the right thing.
Yeah, it's like, I really loved Friendly Neighborhood Spider-Man. Not the TV show I enjoyed, but that wasn't even like down on his luck, Peter.
Yeah.
But the comic book Friendly Neighborhood Spider-Man, that was like 5+ years ago. That was just ground level, Peter, really nice.
Yeah. So Spider-Man number one, I really, really enjoyed it. Picking it mostly because it's never been my best book before, but it really did stand with the other... What?
I said it couldn't have been. It's the first one.
Yeah. But it really did. It stood toe-to-toe with the other two I was considering. So
nice.
But yeah, that's my best book.
Cool, cool, cool.
I guess we'll move on to book blurbs.
Book blurbs. So I still have four, but I imagine we have one that's the same.
Yes, I do too. So you can give me that one.
Okay. This is the one?
Yes. Okay. Although not that cover.
No, not that cover. I picked it up not realizing that it was the coolest guy ever on the front.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I will go first then. I feel like all five books that I read this week could have been my best book.
One of mine couldn't have been.
It was just really nice. But the next one I'm going to bring is Absolute Evil.
Oh.
One, which is just a one shot. I can't be picking up a bunch of stuff because things are tight. They're not tight. It's just a big full month of five Wednesdays. And they always just do weird things then. But this is sort of like the first big like tie-in of all of our Absolute stuff. And it is about kind of the villains meeting together for the first time.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very interesting. I don't want to get too spoilery, but just the place where it ends is like an extreme reversal of like the standard DCU status quo.
Oh.
In a really interesting way. We get introduced to a few more characters that we haven't met before, but that we know exist because like DC, I think we just haven't seen their iterations yet. And it is really well done. Al Ewing was writing with Giuseppe Camuncoli and Stefano Nessi on art. I don't know if Stefano Nessi is Italian, but I was just hitting it really hard from Giuseppe.
Yeah, I mean, hard-boiled New York story, so. Mine was, so.
It was really very good. Shocking, surprising, well worth it. If you're an Absolute Universe reader, to read this, I feel like it's going to set the pace going forward.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I really wonder if the Absolute stuff will outlive DC KO.
I think so, because I feel like it's just very big.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's the most hype stuff they have coming out.
It would be very silly if it didn't.
Mm-hmm. My next one is a book that I love every time it comes out. Unfortunately, it is so spread out when it comes out that I often forget what happened, what was going on, and it takes me a minute to get back into the swing of it. But Arcbound.
Oh, right. I forgot that existed.
Arcbound number six.
Wasn't that like our first episode was Arcbound?
It was one of our first episodes.
Because you can keep talking, but that's nuts.
Yeah, I think this would probably be where a graphic novel of it would end. So I would be shocked if a collected edition didn't come out for this. It is by Tom Hardy, Scott Snyder, and Frank Thierry, and Ryan Smallman. It's just consistent quality. It really is. It's action. It's political intrigue. It's rebellion against a kind of totalitarian but also corporate government, which always is a good thing. Really shows the lengths people will go to get rich, but with some really cool action and laser swords baked into people's arms. So
a good time.
Yeah, it's a fantastic book. I've said it several times on here, and I'm going to say it again. This is going to read great in trade. So I'll just look, see if the trade's coming out.
While you're looking for that, it does look like it was our second episode that the first issue came out, which was mid-November last year.
Well, on 6 issues, so 1 every 2 months is about. It wasn't 1 every 2 months. It was like once a month, and then suddenly it was like once every 3.
Yeah, it happens.
I'm just going to see if there's a trade for this, because I just think it will read great in trade. Volume 1 comes out January 20th at all the places. So, and it's issues 1 through 6. Yeah. When I read this, I was like, that'd be the good end for a trade. So it makes sense. But yeah, I think if you could read this all as one story instead of how I've read it, you would like it even more than I have, and I liked it a lot. So,
all right. So next up for me, the conclusion of like the first year of this book, which I thought has been a lot of fun, and I really enjoyed this issue, is Absolute Superman number 12. Ooh. By Jason Aaron and Rafa Sandoval. And we just kind of have, I mean, this is sort of Superman at his most tortured and sort of most traumatic.
His most Man of Steely.
But doesn't suck. But like kind of coming to terms with the hardship that he's gone through. He spends a lot of time talking to his cape, because his cape is this sentient, like AI space dust cape that does cool stuff, but it's like basically been doing all this stuff and sort of like a father figure to him in the midst of all of this. But he's like coming to terms with like, I should be caring about people, I should be protecting people. It's just good. I feel like we're going to be having a big showdown with Ra's al Ghul very soon, as soon as the next issue.
It's a weird thing to say about Superman, but okay.
Yeah, I know. We're in a weird spot. But he's gonna. But it's good. It's just enjoyable. It's my second favorite Absolute book after Wonder Woman.
Nice. People love Absolute Batman, so that's surprising.
I do like Absolute Batman a lot, too. Especially the last few issues. Probably next week when Absolute Batman comes out, I'll say, it's my second favorite after Wonder Woman.
They're tied.
Wonder Woman. Wonder's in the name.
Yeah, it's got to be wonderful. I'll do my book that really isn't in contention. I liked it when I read it, but then the other 3 so thoroughly blew it out of the water that it was good. And then I read 3 things that were so good that it's like, oh, it was below average. I really want to get into this, but I just don't think I'm going to be able to. And I think I'm going to drop all of them. But this is Starship Godzilla, part of that new Kaisa line of they're trying to make a universe of a connected comic book universe of like kaiju powered stuff. And this was perfectly serviceable. It was fun. It begins with a heist of kaiju eggs. When their ship comes to pick them up, it's like a ship shaped like Godzilla. You can see it right there on the cover.
Yep, looks like Godzilla.
And that's fun. One of the eggs hatches, and the hard-nosed security officer and the little sister of the captain are arguing over what to do because it's causing a lot of damage to the ship, but the little girl loves... she's not little, but the little sister loves kaiju so much that she doesn't want it hurt. Turns out she gets to the kaiju a little bit before the security officer, proves that it can be trained and docile. So she gets to keep it. Then it cuts to the captain, who's kind of been mediating this conflict, talking to the person on his ship caring for the eggs. She goes over and looks at them, and then for whatever reason that I do not know, the captain pulls out his gun and shoots her in the back of the head. So it ends with like some intrigue, and it's a fun little adventure through a giant spaceship. But it's just not hitting. It's just not hitting like I want it to. Unless the week it comes out next month is really light, I just can't see myself picking this up or any of the other Kaisei books anymore. Want it to be great, and it's like normally a C-. This one may be a C+.
Bummer. Okay, well, I'll talk about my last one that is not shared because we have a shared one. And that this one was also really very good. It's all been building up to this moment, and I feel like the payoff was really good, and it's the Rockefellers number 9.
Oh, great.
Again, just I think it's a beautiful looking book. Like just this, like this panel here. It's a spread, but like they're just gorgeous.
Yeah.
Like what Francis Manapul created there. So this is kind of the end of our, we've had like a 3-issue flashback that's sort of shown like why exactly are they on the run? What are they running from?
I wish that would have been earlier. I would have been very interested.
And I think it just played out in a way that I wasn't expecting. But that might just be because I feel like the issues are kind of spread out. Like it's been almost a year since this started coming out, and it's only on issue 9, which fits in with my memory of reading Francis Manapul books in the past. I feel like he works at his own pace.
Yes, he does.
Which is fine because the outcome is gorgeous every time. But I just thought from like a what is going to be the thing that causes them to run, be on the run. It was very well done. It was pleasing. And so now we're going to see where it all breaks out. And I really like the cover of the next issue because it's Halloween. And that's the cover. And it's very fun because they're all like dressed up as other characters from the Ghost Machine line. So it's like you have Geiger. There's the guy from Hyde Street. The Boy Scout's also from Hyde Street. She's dressed up as Rook.
Is she? I couldn't tell.
Yeah, she's got the helmet. And then in the back, you see like Hornsby and Halo are just hanging out back there. Yeah. It's just like very fun.
It's weird to me that Hornsby and Halo is supposedly taking place in the same universe as this.
I guess anything's possible.
That's all. I just thought it was weird.
But it's great.
Perfect. All right. Last and certainly not least.
Certainly not.
It was what I went in with as my best book. But I've praised this series enough, though it has been a long time.
The whole time we've been having a show.
Like, yeah, pretty much.
First episode, we talked about it because it had already all come out.
Oh, had it? Well, Rook Exodus number 7. I was a little worried about this book because of how much I loved the first 6 issues, but I was just getting back into comics. I've read a lot of good comics since then. It didn't disappoint. It was fantastic.
Yeah, I was like, was this like a flash in the pan because I was returning?
Uh-huh.
And it's not. I gotta say, I was a little sad, not because of anything this book did, but it's Inktober this month.
Yes.
And every day there's like a drawing prompt. And the drawing prompt for today, October 5th, when we were recording this, was deer. And I drew him a picture. I'm happy with it. I drew a jackalope. It's lovely.
You wish
I read this book. I read this book and I turn to this page and it's like the coolest freaking deer man ever. dang it.
I, you know what? I don't even feel bad saying this. Maybe the sexiest character in this book.
Yeah.
Is this deer man with a red katana and a bow and arrow on his back?
He's just
who says nothing. He says nothing.
The whole like first third of the book is just wordless for the most part, and it's him fighting off Bloodhound.
Yeah, I hope this guy becomes a major character because he's so.
I mean, if you look at the back, I think it's the back. And it was like, here's all the, it does. Oh yeah. The very back page. Cause if you get just the main covers, they're like are interconnected.
Oh yeah.
And he's the cover for issue 12.
Very cool. Oh, there's a snake chick. I didn't really look at this.
So it seems cool.
Who's the guy behind Torque? Is that the goat girl? That's not what her.
It just closed the page.
It doesn't matter.
There's a fox guy back there too.
Oh yeah.
That is like a bighorn sheep. I don't know. She's a goat. That's a bighorn sheep. Yeah, that's different. Because hers is more of a skull.
I don't know what it is about this book, to be honest with you. It's like paced really well. The art does half the work for it, I think.
Mm-hmm.
But it's just so cool. The trench coats and like infiltration suits and like guns with animal helmets where you control the animals. It's just cool.
Mm-hmm. And I feel like every panel is just so richly created.
Yeah.
It's like every single one. There's like no picture you can look at that's like a throwaway. And no bit in the background that's like, oh, he didn't try as hard right there. It's like every single bit is used up. It feels like it goes really fast. And I'm almost just like, that was it? That's the end? But I'm also just like, oh my gosh, I feel like I just really went through something.
Yeah.
Just because it's just like visually, it's titillating. I've been titillated.
You've been titillated.
Stop saying titillated.
Like even like the preview cover for episode 8 is just so stinking cool. It's like everything that's cool about sci-fi, but adding in like some like really cool fantasy tropes, like cool helmets, which is one of the coolest parts about fantasy.
Controlling animals.
Yeah, like it's so cool. I don't know that I love the design of the spider warden we see at the very end.
Mm-hmm.
But when we see the whole thing, I may change my mind.
Yeah, they've got time.
Yeah.
Tropes.
And legitimately, I love this book so much. And most of the meat of this book is literally Rook recapping the first 6 issues to a goat girl. Like a goat warden. Named, what's her name?
Oh, what is she called?
Matterhorn.
Yeah, Matterhorn. That's a good name.
Such a cool name.
Strong name.
Like that is what most of this is, and it's so good at it. Rook Exodus, phenomenal.
We love you, Rook Exodus.
Cameron got the cover with the stag guy. I think they learned his name in the first 6 issues, but...
Yeah, it's been a while, and I gave them all back to you. Maybe I should just buy the trade.
Yeah, the trade is out now, and I don't know that I recommend a trade more highly than the first 6 issues of this. So it was fantastic. I was a little worried that I wasn't going to love it as much, but I did. So there's our little shared thing on Rook Exodus.
Ba-ba-da-ba.
And those are all of the books we read this week.
We did it.
But what did you read this week, listener? Let us know. Have you picked up the trade for Rook Exodus yet? I really want to just have some time, and I just don't have any time right now. I would really love to get some time to just read through the trades for Geiger and Redcoat because they seem so cool.
They do.
I would love to do that one of these days. Maybe the library probably wouldn't have them, right?
I don't know. You can always check Libby also.
Yeah.
This is a new segment that we're starting right now, which is Cameron looks to see if something's on Libby.
But you don't get the physical one with Libby, do you?
No.
I can still read it.
Doesn't seem to be.
I feel like libraries only really do comic books when they're like...
Hoopla's more graphic novels. So I'm checking Hoopla.
Oh, okay.
You ever do Hoopla?
No, I think we talked about it. Isn't it really good for audiobooks as well?
Uh-huh. It's nice because there's no wait. They do have, the collected editions of Geiger.
All 3?
Yeah.
Love it.
But the nice part about Hoopla, dear listener, is there's no like wait time. So you could just go and get it and read it. Mm-hmm. Let's see if Redcoat's on here. I spelled it correctly. I spelled Red Oat. Redcoat's on there too. The first volume is at least.
I think there's only one volume. I think and it also.
The issues are on here also.
Nice. Okay. I might check that out. Because I still really, I'm only reading this one Ghost Machine book, but I'm still just, I love the idea of Ghost Machine. I love.
All the way through issue 14.
They have, of Redcoat?
Uh-huh.
Now here's the real question. is the first volume of Rook Exodus on there.
Rook Exodus. Yeah.
Guys, you don't even have to pay. Just go to Hoopla and get Rook Exodus.
Yeah, I'm putting this in the show notes. Sponsored, not sponsored, by Hoopla.
Yeah, we just actually did a live ad read.
I'll reach out to their lawyers so they can send us money from this free library service.
Yeah, yeah, that's probably something they do. But yes, that is the end of our first segment and our ad. Now we're into the B segment.
I thought that was a good ad read, you know?
Yeah, it was great.
If you're out there and you're looking for people to be enthusiastic about your goods and services, I think we just really showed our stuff.
Yeah, we will really just like use your service on the air.
Uh-huh, like I just did.
Yeah. First person to email us, I got Rook Exodus on Hoopla, gets a shout out.
Mm-hmm. A gold star.
A gold star. We don't have anything to actually give. I'm sorry.
You give me your address, I will mail you a sticker.
Oh.
A random sticker from my sticker drawer at school.
I love that. I'll hold him to it. I will hold him to it. Be the first to message us that you read Rook Exodus on Hoopla.
Maybe I'll print off a certificate that says I was the first listener to download Rook Exodus from Hoopla. And all I got was this lousy certificate.
All I got was this lousy sticker. But yeah, so we're going on to the B segment. I just kind of wanted to talk about nerdy stuff on the B segment.
That's what we're here for.
Yeah, yeah. I personally, and you can do whatever you want, Cameron. I personally want to review Life of a Showgirl.
I figured you would. I haven't listened to it.
How could you not?
I don't know.
I've probably listened to it 4 times total while I was working the other day. So for those of you who do not know, the little known that very much needs our random word of mouth artist, Taylor Swift, if you've never heard of her, has a new album out called Life of a Showgirl. I would say probably her most anticipated album in quite a while, at the very least. A lot of hoopla with this one, especially with the engagement, and her kind of going back to her happy music roots with this one. She said she was just happy writing this album. And I think that shows. There are people who are a little unhappy with it, I think, because it does not have maybe the lyrical complexity they've come to know since Folklore, where she's been kind of writing songs that are as much poems as songs. And these are just kind of pop hits. And more than that, something I noticed almost immediately is, and I think this is really cool, is that almost every song in this is kind of paying homage to a classic song. Like, for example, my favorite song on the album straight up uses the track of the Jackson 5. And I was like, hasn't Taylor gotten, like, angry about not being credited as the inspiration for stuff before? And then I went and looked, and she credited every single band that she took inspiration from, which was kind of impressive, to be honest with you. I don't think it is my favorite Taylor Swift album ever. That still belongs to Folklore in 1989. But I think it's very good and very musically interesting. You can tell most of the songs in it, I would say, are about her current relationship, the man she's marrying, including, again, my favorite song on the whole track, which starts with straight up just I Want You Back by Jackson 5, and kind of stays in the disco realm the entire time it is. And it is just an entire song about his penis.
I was wondering if that's the one you were talking about.
It's a fantastic song. And it wasn't until the second listen that I realized like every lyric in this is about this man's dick.
It was funny because I saw Nicki Minaj had posted about it and was like, this is going to go over so many people's heads. And I'm like, it's not subtle.
She couches it in enough poetry that if you're just kind of listening to vibe, you might miss it But it is.
I feel like you just put a lot of qualifiers on that.
I mean, you have to not be listening.
If you don't listen to the song, you won't get it.
But it, I mean, it's by far the song that I've had stuck in my head the most. So what do you do? I'm a sucker for retro pastiche. What can I say? But yeah, I really enjoy this album. The Fate of Ophelia. I feel like a lot of people have been kind of trashing it a little bit, because she seems to have like no concept of what happens to Ophelia in Hamlet or Macbeth. I'm blanking.
That would be Hamlet.
Hamlet, thank you.
You seem to have no concept of where Ophelia is.
What?
I'm just joking. Just forget about it.
But I don't think that is a valid criticism, because I think even she would say that this is fanfic centering Ophelia as the hero. Like, this is just like how her version of Romeo and Juliet doesn't end with them killing each other.
That we know of.
Well, in the song.
They killed themselves.
Okay, you're right.
Jeannie.
In that same way, The Fate of Ophelia is kind of in conversation with that song as like, this is how I want Ophelia's story to have gone. It's a good opener. I find...
Marry me, Hamlet, never have to be alone. I won't drown myself in the river. like that?
Yeah, kind of. I don't like the second song very much at all, Elizabeth Taylor. It's just not my thing. Opalite is a bop. It is so much fun. I think it is one that people will kind of be banging their heads to for a while. My Birthstone is also Opal, just like Travis Kelce's. So I picked up pretty quick that this was a song about him. And it's really just like a song that's like, I'm so happy I found you and that we're in love. Father Figure is about her relationship with fame. It's fine. Eldest Daughter about her relationship with responsibility. It's pretty good. Ruin the Friendship, I really like. I don't know that I fully get it. I feel like it's very deep Taylor lore that I have never looked into. It seems to be about regrets of what could have been after a friend from high school died. Actually, Romantic is a very fun diss track aimed at Charlie XCX. I got filled in on that whole beef. That was kind of fun.
Me too. I saw a video from the LA Public Library where a woman comes to the librarian and she's like, so what's the deal with Charlie XCX and Taylor Swift in the library? And he's just like, okay, so I don't know everything, but he just like runs through every single bit of it. And he's just like, public library is where it's at.
The public library. That's where you learn. Man, I should have been a librarian. Anyway.
You still could.
What?
You still could.
Still good. I gotta get a master's.
That's true.
But yeah, it's a fun diss track. I know that it's probably the most contentious song on the album, but I think it's fun. Again, Wishlist, a fun pop song about how Travis checks all the wishes on her list.
About making an Amazon wish list.
Yep. I've heard some people trying to say, like, I hope the line, I hope my kids look like you, is like a racist dog whistle. I think that's very silly. The spokesperson for Pfizer and someone who endorsed Kamala Harris is not making a racist dog whistle. She wants her kids to look like her husband. I think that's fairly normal.
That's just the way it is.
Again, Wood is my favorite song on the album. I love retro funk pastiche. And it is just a disco song with Taylor Swift lyrics. Canceled is another one of these deep lore Taylor Swift songs that I don't really get. I really like the bass line of it, though. That's my attachment to it, is it's got a good bass line. It's very much like a, I don't know. And then Honey and Life of a Showgirl are great, great, fun, happy pop songs to...
Sabrina Carpenter's on there.
Yep. And it's really fun because Sabrina sings her parts of Life of a Showgirl I'm kind of like playful and cheeky, like she's wont to do. And Taylor sings all of her lines very wistfully and seriously. And I just think like it's a fun duality of like they're both showgirl. Yeah. So, yeah, I really, really enjoy the album. I don't think it's ever going to be like a favorite of mine, but I enjoy it. It's only got really two or three skips for me. And I probably wouldn't even take the energy to skip them. They're not bad enough that I would turn it. But apparently Taylor Swift has made me love a song about her boyfriend's penis. So,
that happened.
That's a thing, I guess. It was really funny because when I was first listening to the album, I caught on very quickly that Opalite was just about like how happy she is to have Travis Kelce. And he has been saying since the album was announced that Opalite is his favorite song. I'm like, that dude is a narcissist. but then I got to the song Wood and I'm like, oh, he didn't go around mentioning though that one of the songs is entirely about the redwood tree in his pants, as the song calls it.
You're right, Chance. I don't know how anybody.
She doesn't say the in his pants part. It's he's the redwood tree. Anyway, but yeah, I was like, maybe he's not a narcissist because there's an entire song just about his penis, and he did not mention it once. So,
you know, it's for the surprise.
For the surprise of it all. In fact, it kind of puts the podcast they did together in like pretty stark relief. It's like he's just sitting there knowing that there was a song about his dick on there and not saying a word.
Well, I mean, how do you really broach the topic?
The only person in history who has ever become a billionaire strictly through entertainment singing, not through like production and stuff like that, wrote an entire song about my dick.
What can you say?
What do you do?
Glowing endorsement, I suppose.
Cameron, next week I expect you to report on at least the song Wood. And what'd you think of it?
We'll see. I don't know.
Just give it a listen.
Anyway, I might. We'll see what happens. I guess it's my turn to talk about something.
Yeah.
I can't do like a full review of it because I really just started it, but I did want to talk about the little bit of Final Fantasy Tactics, the Ivalice Chronicles that I've gotten to play. Because Chance, let me tell you, I've never beaten the game.
Oh, that's right. I always forget that.
Huh?
I always forget you've never beaten it.
I've never beaten it. I've gotten pretty far, but you know, it was at a time in my life where I just didn't beat games. And I've started it a lot and like done many runs. And when I say that it feels like coming home, like it really does. Like just turning it on, hearing the sounds, I think more than like Final Fantasy VII, more than Final Fantasy XII, more than Final Fantasy X, like it just feels home.
Sure.
In a way that even those like all-time hits for me, I don't know about Final Fantasy VII. It's just one that I played a lot. Like it hits oh so right. And just like the music, I'm playing the enhanced version because on it you can play like the original version, like with the graphics and everything, or the enhanced version where it's like fully voiced and like the graphics are somewhat better. Smooth. Still, when I'm like trying to position my units and there's like a tree in the way and I can't see, like that's still there. But you know, that's just good fun. But I'm playing that version, and it makes me sad playing that version because when a character dies, they don't go, oh, or which is that with that sound, they actually say something, which is just a real bummer.
That is a bummer.
But it's just fun. It's just right. And I know people are like, they could have done more, they could have released more content. And maybe they could have, maybe they should have, but it's honestly just like a perfect.
Do people think they should have released more content?
Yeah.
Why?
Because people are never happy. There's a perpetual outrage machine that feeds into them at all time, and algorithms that tell them they need to be upset about things all the time. And so that's what they're going to do.
Final Fantasy Tactics is a perfect product as is. You fix the translation a little bit. Like, I don't even know if it needs the voices, to be honest with you. And I know people were a little up in arms that they weren't including the Onion Knight and the Dark Knight, but let's be honest. The Dark Knight sucked, and the Onion Knight, no one played. Like, I don't want to work. But the only thing that they were good for is breaking the game in just a way that's not really fun.
It would have been cool if they kept, like, the War of the Lions, like, extra characters, like, where you could be, like, Balthier.
Yeah, I could see that.
Which would just be fun.
Even I thought that they would have Clive, just because every new version of Tactics seems to have a recent character.
Clive makes more sense than Noctis.
But I am glad they didn't. I just want an easy way to play that game.
Yeah, which is what I wanted, because, like, I have it on my phone, but it's just, like, the UI is impossible.
Impossible.
It doesn't feel good.
Yeah.
It feels bad. And this doesn't feel bad. This feels good.
Agreed.
And so, like, that's important. But I just think what it is, I mean, it was $50, which, I mean, $50 isn't, like, not much money, as I'm over here, like...
For a brand new video game, though.
What?
I said for a brand new video game, though.
For a brand new video game. It's not bad. And I had a bunch of points that I didn't know that I had at GameStop, and so I got it for $35.
Ooh, nice.
And so that is an even better price point. And so I've just really been enjoying it. Like I said, it feels right. It feels good. It feels like home in a way that few video games do.
Yeah. I have in my life heard in the wild, because people are playing it on their phones, or there's, like, someone streaming it on a TV at a video game shop or something. I've heard the select sound, and it gives me a visceral physical reaction. That sound, mm-hmm. I'm like, wait, what? Tactics? Where's Bramza? I need. So it is.
Yes.
Yeah, that A button select sound or X button select sound is just so ingrained into who I am as a human.
The sound is still there.
Yeah.
So
I checked.
I must know if the sound is there. Yeah, but this past month was just an absolutely insane time for video games that I enjoy. Where this one is the only one I picked up, I want to say, even though there's, like, a bunch. Because it's, like, Borderlands 4, I want to play. Really looking forward to that. Trails in the Sky, first chapter, remake, really want to play that. Hades 2, really want to play that. And I think there was even one more. But there's just too many things in this world. But, man, what a good thing that Square Enix finally did.
They did. And I've heard that there is talk of releasing, like, some kind of follow-up if it sells well. So,
with what? A follow-up with what?
No, a tactic. Now that they've got the engine and everything for it, they've talked about the possibility of more if it sells well.
Oh, I hope it did and does. And maybe we can get some Tactics Advanced, because who doesn't love an isekai?
Well, I would love Ivalice Chronicles 2.
That's true. But, I mean, Tactics Advanced was in Ivalice.
I mean, it was. That wasn't the same.
No, it was not the same. Well, like, Final Fantasy XII was also in Ivalice, but it's more like the Advanced Tactics Advanced Ivalice than the Tactics Ivalice.
Yeah, and none of the... Well, 12 is, but Tactics Advanced and Tactics Advanced 2 aren't, like, political epics.
Mm-hmm.
They're, like, adventure...
It's an isekai.
I mean, it is, yes. It is an isekai.
It's the isekai thing. I mean, I felt like Tactics Advance, while not being political, was very, like, heavy.
There were definitely heavy moments, but it was more about, like, I guess hopes and dreams than political.
Yes, that's true. But when your hope is, like, I hope that my dad isn't a drunk.
Yeah.
And I would see him being a respected member of society.
And one of the girls just hopes her hair isn't white.
What?
Then the girl just hopes her hair isn't white.
Yeah, we've all been there.
she can't let you finish getting the crystals because her hair would be white.
Yeah, that one's not quite as sad as the my dad will be a drunk again.
Yes.
Tim.
And let's be honest, Judge Magisters are, like, some of the coolest armor that's ever existed.
That is I really love it in 12 also.
They look freaking cool in 12.
It introduced in Tactics Advanced and then...
Mm-hmm. And then got the glow up of the century.
Yeah. Some of the coolest fantasy armor of all time. I would love for them to continue that story. I think there's still a lot to tell, especially when you... Because, like, the first time I feel like you play Tactics, you don't really get the greater story going on and, like, the Civil War and stuff that's going on in, like, the neighboring kingdom and all that. So I really think a two... because I think the creator of Tactics has even said, like, Ramza goes and fights in that Civil War afterwards. So I really think, like, that story is still out there to be told.
I'd play it.
I won't get my hopes up, but I think it would be very neat. But I think that is it for our B segment, our media reviews. Now we're just talking about media we're enjoying. In Uncles.
One more thing. And you are up first.
I'm going to cheat. Because I have two, but I can umbrella them. So
I can do two also.
Well, but they won't be able to umbrella them.
They won't. Maybe. No.
Umbrella. Maybe. Because I'm going to bring for my one more thing. The franchise that is Digimon. Because we are just... We are in a digital renaissance at the moment.
Renaissance.
This past weekend, Digimon Story Time Stranger releasing. And just today, in fact, Digimon Beat Break premiering on Crunchyroll. And both are excellent. Both are just absolutely great. There's only one episode of Beat Break, but it is... so sick and so cool. If you just go watch it, like all of you, go watch. It's one episode, and it is just everything you kind of want Digimon to be. Like the very first, you see this little like kind of cat fox Digimon. I think his name is like Prismon or something. And almost immediately he digivolves into Champion. And like his champion is like this werefox with like robotic arms that can fire like cannon blasts out of his arms, and he's wearing jeans. It's just like everything great about Digimon designs.
It's the jeans that did it for me just now.
Did you see it?
No, I'm just saying in your description. I just remembering those Instagram reels that you sent me of the guy being like, "This is how we're gonna do the Digimon."
Oh yes, yes, denim. Give them. They will love denim. Yes, I remember that now. It is a really mature looking. Like they put money into the animation budget of this show. It is just cool looking. The concept is really interesting. Like basically everyone has a cell phone that's also an artificial intelligence. That shaped like an egg, and it feeds off of the emotional energy they give off during the day, so it never runs out of power. And they use it for like literally everything. Like it orders your food when you get to a restaurant because it knows what you want before you do. Mm. But when certain characters get their hands on it, they hatch into Digimon. And certain Digimon that are kind of like wild, I guess, are draining the emotions out of people.
I need my emotions.
It's a here's the rookie of the one that I was telling you about. This isn't the main Digimon, but it's the first one we see. So that's the rookie, and then it almost immediately evolves into Champion, which is called Wolvermon, like Wolverine.
Mm-hmm. I picked up on it. It wasn't subtle.
Well, I'm for the listeners at home, they may not have heard.
like Taylor Swift, it was not subtle.
And he's like a kiss robot arm.
Oh yeah, there's denim.
it's just like, and that's in the first like 2 minutes of the show. And he's just very cool. There's like several cool new Digimon. Just watch it. Watch it. It's one episode. See if you like it, dear listener. Or you, Cameron, even.
I like Digimon.
But it was.
I dreamed of being digi-destined in my youth.
Yeah, yeah, You did. And with that, I am probably 20 some odd hours into Digimon Story Time Stranger as well. I would say I'm probably about a third of the way through, maybe encroaching on half, just from how it seems. I'm just about to unlock ultimate level Digimon. And it's just a good game. I haven't played a game in a while that feels as much like you started doing something small and it just spiraled into doing something big. But it's like it flows really well, one point to the next. Like the story flows just extremely well, and it is so convenient to digivolve and de-digivolve and like convert new Digimon and all that I spend so much time doing that like and all I can do is up to champion right now, but I've done that so much that's like I've got even more to engage with, is I guess what I'm trying to say. But it just like, it's like, okay, I've got to do this thing. Oh, but on my way to do this thing, I got sidetracked by this thing. And now I've got to do this thing to make sure that other thing happened. But oh no, this ally needs my help. And it's like, I don't know. It's just like a very classic adventure where you're basically just trying to get from point A to point B, but all this adventure happens along the way. I'm knee deep in Digimon right now and I'm loving it.
Could I be Beelzemon?
Yeah, of course.
Good. I always like Beelzemon.
I've got a new Digimon that I like very much. I don't know if it's brand new to this game. I know it is not like a popular Digimon before it. But this guy, his name is Blimpmon.
Blimpmon?
Yeah, I digivolved one. You don't know what you're digivolving it into most of the time. I digivolved into him, and I'm like, this is such a great Digimon. I love him. So I have a Blimpmon that I'm using. I right now, actually, my team, the main three I'm using is Angemon, Devimon, and Blimpmon. So an angel, a demon, and a blimp.
He's a vehicle Digimon.
Yes.
He was used as transportation for Babamon Digimon School's school trip.
Oh, I don't know what that means, but okay.
Me neither. I said a bunch of words.
But yeah, and you can ride probably half of the Digimon, which is really quite cool.
The other half ride you.
That would be crazy. For Blimpmon, you just kind of sit on his head and he like takes you around.
So I guess Blimpmon is one you ride on. He doesn't ride on you.
Yeah, right.
Okay. That's good. Bit of a spoiler, but okay.
Leomon's really fun. You just sit on his shoulder and he holds you there.
That's real sweet.
But you can ride on
him. What is it? Pokemon Let's Go Pikachu and Let's Go Eevee. Mm-hmm. You can like ride on the different, and like Machamp's just like holding you like that.
Yes. It is kind of like that, actually.
Or did he have a harness? I can't remember. He should have.
No, he just held you like a baby in that one. Like literally his other two hands like cradled you.
That's real sweet. I want to be cradled by a Machamp.
Yeah. Yeah. Just feel his pecs just around you.
Mm-hmm. Feel like I'd feel safe.
I just think the feature, like I have not found a use for riding on Digimon. But just the fact that you can is really cool.
It makes sense.
I just got Digi-Eggs from like the second season. And I'm riding around on a Pegasusmon right now.
That feels real special.
Yeah.
Submarinemon.
He's in the game. I haven't gotten him yet. I don't have a Digi-Egg of reliability yet. I had not spent any money in this game, like at all. Like I hadn't bought anything. Because I felt like by exploring I had found most of what I needed. And then I found this crafter who made all of the Digi-Eggs. And I was going through like buying them all, and I was like, why can't I get this next egg? And I had spent every cent that I had in that game.
I was like, oh, that helps you somehow.
That's okay. I have no money because I've bought, I think six Digi Eggs.
Good news, guys. I spent all my money.
I'm very much enjoying Digimon Beat Break, the one episode, like I said, just came out today. Digimon Time Stranger. Check them out.
Nice. Well, mine don't umbrella like yours did, so I just don't know what I'm going to do.
You didn't do it.
They're both audiobooks that I listen to and am listening to.
Well, the concept of audiobooks.
The concept of audiobooks, because I was waiting for the next Dresden Files book, Hold, to come through. So I was like, well, I'll just read this, and I bet by the time it's done, it'll be available, and it wasn't, so I started another book.
Okay.
And that's my story, and I'm sticking to it. The first book is called When the Clock Broke by John Gans, and it is different from what I would normally read and or talk about. But I just thought it was really interesting, like, political explainer that's sort of like a how did we get to this point.
Oh, that was the nonfiction you read.
The nonfiction one is that one. You're like, what is this one? That sounds like a fun adventure. No, it's about mostly about the 1992 presidential election. And there was a lot of ridiculousness surrounding it. And some sort of ideas and real bad people with some real bad ideas that sort of rose to the forefront of the time and were beat back at the time. But a lot of their not so good ideas have reemerged and reborn in our modern time. So I guess they weren't that beaten. So it was like really interesting, helpful to understand our current political climate, but also maybe a little disheartening just because, you know, these problems didn't go away. It was enjoyable. I feel like the writing was really good. Just moved along really nicely. And I felt like I just understood even modern politics a little bit more by looking at them at that point. And everybody's just kind of terrible.
Yeah.
In their own special ways.
I've been following this scholar named Tad Stromer.
Mm-hmm.
And he studies resistance movements.
Yes, we've talked about him on the show before.
Oh, have we?
Uh-huh.
He had a thing recently about, like, basically everything we're dealing with now. And I say this mostly because I think I kind of want to write a story about it. But basically everything we're dealing with now is because Reconstruction was brought to a halt and everything was buried and forgotten about the Confederacy.
Oh, absolutely.
Like, after, like, the inability to hold the Confederacy to account in the long term after the Civil War is what has led to our current political moment. And he really maps it all out. It's like, oh, that makes so much sense.
It does, though, doesn't it?
So it just fascinating. But anyway.
So there was that book, which mostly made me, like, I understood more, but also was just, like, depressed.
Yeah.
Of just like, oh, the bad things don't really go away like they seemed to at that time. But then I started reading another book, and I really wasn't sure. Like, it's an author that I know Chance really enjoys.
He's my favorite author.
I'm going to give it a shot. And then I just, like, didn't start it for, like, a day. But then I finally did, and I'm very glad I did. And that book is called Shards of Earth by Adrian Tchaikovsky. It's a sci-fi sort of space opera-esque book. That's just really cool.
That's the one with the architects and, like, the female warrior class and all that.
Yes. Okay.
I've read the first 10 chapters, but I've
never... The warrior angels of punching you in the face.
Yes.
As they are referred to, which I just think is a delight. So essentially, it's set in, I suppose, the world. Earth is in it, like actual Earth. But the book starts with Earth having been destroyed by these, like, massive, unknowable alien forces called the Architects, who will just, for no reason that anybody's ever been able to figure out, will just go and, like, destroy planets. And just, like, warp them in this way. So Earth is still there. It's just, like, warped. They said it's almost like a flower that opened. Earth has just opened up. And it's, like, all curls and spirals like a flower petal.
People still go there, though. I'm just trying to remember the things. Like,
I don't believe that they do.
Really? I thought that there was, like...
There's, like, a place that's called Brendenhof or something like that, which I think is maybe nearby, but it's kind of the new seat of power of humanity. But then there's, like, this character, there's this like, not race, but, like, this group of people called intermediaries that are basically, like, psychic warriors, not the right word, because the main one that we follow in the story doesn't feel like a warrior. He feels like an ordinary person who's just gotten way over his head and is, like, completely messed up because of the things that were done to him in order to repel this invasion. But basically he's, like, able to connect with the greater stuff of the universe.
It's not as much like Jedi as you're thinking it is.
No, it's not at all. It's not like
these words sound very Jedi-y. It's not.
It's not. It's really not. And there's like lots of talk about like space and unspace, and there's like no real way to explain unspace other than like the literal phrase unspace. but it's just like just this adventure that sort of like rolls along as the main battle angel of punching you in the face has been given a mission to go and get this intermediary to agree to help kind of the female warrior race with something that they're wanting to do. And they're one of like the major players in the universe. And so they go and she's like, presents him with the opportunity. He's like, no, I don't even want to hear what the opportunity is. So I'm like 70% of the way through the book and I don't even know what she's trying to ask him about. Cause things just like spiral out from there. And they're just like being pursued by all these different factions for all these different reasons. But it's all just so interesting. And I feel like the characters are super compelling. Mm-hmm. I'm just having a really fun time. But I'm really liking it. I don't read a whole lot of sci-fi, but maybe I will change that because I feel like when I read this or read this, it just feels very exciting. Mm-hmm. And I remember when I read Leviathan's Wake, it also just felt like very exciting in a way that a lot of other books don't. And maybe it's just because those two are really good. Or maybe it's something with the genre.
I mean, I read Children of Time and then proceeded last year to devour like 9 Adrian Tchaikovsky books, like almost immediately.
You got a lot. There's a lot of them.
He maybe outproduces Brandon Sanderson right now.
It's a great time to be alive.
But yeah, he's got a lot of great books. I started that book at the beginning of this year, but I haven't been able to finish a book like this year. I still haven't.
Wow.
So
I'm reading for both of us.
You're reading for both of us. But I need to finish it. Because I was enjoying it as well. If memory serves, I got very intimidated by the first like 2 or 3 chapters,
mm-hmm.
because it was like very like broad scope.
And there's a lot of proper nouns without a lot of explaining, but it's in a way that is like, I feel like the book structurally does very interesting things where sometimes it'll do that and then like the next chapter will cut back and just like, and here's all of the lore surrounding this thing that you need to know. And like several times through the book it'll be like, oh, and they're going here and here's everything, here's the deal of what they're walking into right now, and they have no idea.
Exactly. But like the first like I said, like 2 or 3 chapters is very broad. And then, like, when it finally zooms in on this intermediary and you start, like, experiencing the world kind of through him,
mm-hmm.
that's when it all kind of clicks into place. And then all of the things in the chapters before start making sense.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, oh, okay. So he, okay, you can.
Yes, it all comes together.
Yeah. So if you do try Adrian Tchaikovsky, just know that Shards of Earth, the first couple chapters are a little tough.
But once you're in, you're in.
There's
really fun alien races that I really like. Like, just in the intermediary, he has a little crew that he's just the pilot. He's not even the captain. And there's like humans, but then there's like this basically a race of like sentient hive mind cockroaches.
Mm-hmm.
That like there's like swarms of them that will like instance and take over like a robot body. And like they're acting as the mind for the shell that they're in. There's like a race of crab people because of course there is. And we love it.
I really wonder, I really do, if those are references to Children of Time. I've meant to look it up several times. I just never have. But Adrian Tchaikovsky loves bugs. He loves them. And crabs.
Well, I mean, there's is it carcinization?
What?
It's basically the idea that all evolution is leading towards crabs.
Oh, maybe.
Like that book cover I sent you called Crabitalism.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
But essentially it's that. It's like everything becomes crabs.
Everything eventually is just.
Brandon Sanderson's also obsessed with crabs. Like the whole Stormlight Archive is like, but what if cows were crabs?
What if the
entire people that they're fighting against was crabs, sort of.
yeah, Adrian Tarkovsky, I guess, more is Bugs. Because, like, his big book, the one that, like, really got
Children of Time is the spider one, right?
Yeah, Children of Time is, like, well, it's a whole planet of sentient.
Yeah, it's like, what if evolution but spiders?
Well, what if human? Because there's other bugs in it, too. There's cockroaches, there's ants, but the main characters are spiders. And then the second one of that is kind of a similar idea, but octopuses, but there's quite a few crabs in that one.
Mm-hmm.
And then his big epic fantasy series that's like several books in at this point, is all like nations of different people who draw power from different bugs. I haven't read it, so
he's just a bug guy.
Yeah, he loves bugs.
What can you do? But yeah, so I've really been enjoying that book. By the time this episode comes out, but pretty soon I will be done with it. But then my next Dresden Files book finally came in. So I'm back on that because this is my favorite one.
Yes, I do love the Dresden Files. And 12 Months is coming out soon.
January.
Is it January?
Yeah.
I've got to at least do Peace Talks and Battlegrounds again this
fall.
This year.
I believe in you. I believe in you, Chance.
I've just not been able to finish a book. I just don't know what it is. I think the only book I have finished this year is I think I passively listened to Stormfront again. I had big plans to listen to all of them again, and I did not do that.
It'll come around.
And legitimately, I don't know if I did finish Stormfront or if I just know Stormfront so well at this point that I can fill in all of the blanks.
Yeah, you made it happen. All right. Well, we've done it.
We've
made it to the end of yet another episode. Episode 40. We've done this 40 times now, which is pretty fun.
40 more things.
Mm-hmm. Actually, we each do one more thing. Mm-hmm. So it'd be like 80 more things.
80 more things.
But yeah, we want to say thanks for listening with us. Thanks for sticking with us through at least this episode. If it's your first one, you've at least listened to this one. So thanks for that.
If you made it through me pouring cereal milk on my keyboard, great job.
Bless you. Love that. I love that for you, and I love that for us. I don't know if we said it earlier, but if you do want to tell us about anything, just anything, or if you want to tell us that you're the first person to check out Rook Exodus on Hoopla, you can email us at hotcomicpulls@gmail.com or reach out to us on Blue Sky at comicspalooza.bsky.social. And I will send you a certificate if you get me your mailing address. And
we won't read your mailing address on
No, that won't be read on the air, but we will say this is the person who won the prestigious award.
Yeah, and you have to like check it out with the intent of it.
Yeah, not
just I don't want to like I did it just to get the certificate. That's lame.
Yeah. This isn't Book It.
Oh, is that the pizza thing?
One. The pizza one where you read and get the pizza.
Okay. I never did that, so I don't know how it works.
Mm, you didn't live.
I didn't get a personal pan pizza.
It just ingrained that's probably a real big reason that like just a little treat culture exists. It's like I did this task, I get reward.
Yes.
I do the task, I get reward. We've been Pavloved.
I was getting on to my son, not like mad getting on, but just like, buddy, you gotta do this about AR the other day. Because he's just keeps forgetting his AR book at school. So I was getting on to him, and then like legitimately I stopped in the middle and been like, I feel like such a hypocrite right now. I hated AR. I hated being told like read this book for school, not for fun.
I had fun with AR. It was reading for fun because I got points and the numbers went up.
I'm a good reader. I always have been, but the minute you tell me like do this for a grade, I'm like, well, now it's not fun anymore.
Yeah, you've ruined it. Now you've ruined it.
But my fifth grade teacher, and if Terrace is listening, our fifth grade teacher, Miss Daniels, hello, she set me up.
Listening.
What?
If Miss Daniels is listening.
Yeah, she's listening. I don't know. Maybe. She set me up to like make AR tests.
Uh-huh.
Because she realized that I liked to read. I just didn't like to read what I was told to read. So she like basically told me I could read whatever I wanted, and then I could make the AR test for it. And she would make sure that I got the points and I got the score. So I wrote like I wrote an AR test for every book of the Lost Years of Merlin.
Oh my.
If you haven't read those, if you've ever read those books, and most of the early 2000s, late 90s Star Wars book.
Hey.
And that's fifth grade.
I wrote a few number of AR tests in my day as well.
Yeah.
I wrote the Harry Potter ones before they existed, for probably like books 1 through 4, I think. Because, you know.
Yeah. I don't remember doing that once we left grade school, because we weren't being graded for AR anymore.
Yeah. That was when we lived in Dover, not in Burns Flat. But we did AR.
Mm-hmm. We still had AR as well, but I did not engage with it because it wasn't for a grade anymore.
You didn't have to. Well, this has been AR Corner, Accelerator Reader, for those of you who don't know.
This has been I was being a hypocrite with my son, and I had to confess it to him.
Yes, we told you that we would talk about our kids again.
Yeah.
It happened twice. But thanks for sticking with us through all of that, too. But this has been Comics Palooza. As Chance always says, the only comic book podcast that's always hot to go. Mm-hmm. Thanks for listening. And you can find us probably not next week, but the week after at the same turtle time and the same bat channel.